injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
Couldn't help myself.
Yeah, that okay. was very good.
You like that?
Very good.
Yeah, good.
I love it.
Yeah. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. All right, hang on a second here. I can't get this to save. A lot of controversy over something called Marcy's Law. You've written about it. People have responded to your column. Can you explain what Marcy's Law is?
Sure. So Marcy's Law is an attempt to constitutionalize, to amend the Wisconsin Constitution to add protections for victims of crime. And to most people, including me, at first blush, that sounds great. I mean, nobody's against victims. Nobody is really against protecting victims of crime. But when you dig a little bit deeper into this, you begin to realize that there are certain, perhaps unintended consequences to a bill that may well be well-meaning amongst the people that are trying to push it. But the problem is that in Marcy's Law, the language of it, I mean, it includes language like this: to be treated with dignity, respect, courtesy, sensitivity, and fairness for victims of crime. That's great. Nobody disagrees with that. What does that mean, however? I mean, that language, very similar or the same language in much of Marcy's Law, is already included in Chapter 950 of the Wisconsin statutes. But when you constitutionalize it, you add a whole new dimension to it. And one of the things I could see it playing out as is in the following way. Look, I'm cross-examining some accuser at a trial, somebody that is alleging to be a victim of a crime, but the client has not been convicted, the defendant has not been convicted, and he's presumed innocent. At a trial, I'm cross-examining the alleged victim, and there's an objection based upon the Wisconsin Constitution that says, this defense attorney is asking me uncomfortable questions or questions that are not treating me with dignity, respect, courtesy, sensitivity, and fairness. What happens then under those scenarios? Am I not allowed to cross-examine the witness? I mean, we do have a constitutional right to confront your accuser. Secondly, there's another provision of this that talks about how an alleged victim of crime can refuse a discovery request made by the accused or any person acting on behalf of the accused. That's very broad. I don't know what that means. Wisconsin already has in its law, if I want to, as a defense attorney, try to get an accuser or an alleged victim's health records or medical records, and I think that there's something in there that would be important, I have to make a showing. I can't just subpoena in Wisconsin. I can't just subpoena a victim's medical records. I have to go through a process and demonstrate to a judge that the records are likely to contain something that could be exculpatory to my client, in essence. But this goes much further in this broad language, just refusing a discovery request. I don't know what that means. That doesn't just say medical records. That just says a discovery request made by the accused. And I've seen the proponents of Marcy's Law say, well, look, you don't have a right to discovery until trial. Well, excuse me, you have to prepare for trial. How do you prepare for trial? They can't just dump all this evidence on you at trial. That's why we have the pretrial right of discovery in the Wisconsin statutes. This would conflict with that, in my opinion, because it would allow people that are, it would fail to allow people that are accused of crimes the right to meaningful evidence, or at least it could, especially in the broad way that this could be interpreted.
Well,
and so once you add something to the Constitution, it's a whole new level, and it's not supposed to be a competition between the alleged victim's rights and the defendant's rights. That's not the way that it works.
And is it not true that the government that's trying the defendant, trying to take their liberty away and put them away, and in some cases for good reason, do they not have all the power and resources of the government to do discovery themselves?
Absolutely.
And does this bill call for ending that?
For ending discovery?
Yeah. It doesn't call for ending the prosecution's discovery, does it?
No, I mean, that's the problem. That's the reason why we have due process protection.
The scales of justice here, right?
Power. Yeah, and people are presumed innocent of any crime, no matter how horrible the crime may be. Again, this sounds like a good bill when you first hear it, because people's first reactions to it is, yeah, I'm for victims. Who wouldn't be? But you've got to dig deeper on this and look at it for what it is and for what it could do. I mean, if you're looking at it, and I've seen a lot of people that have come out in favor of Marcy's Law say, well, I wasn't treated right when I went through the criminal justice process. Again, we already have protections in Chapter 950, and a lot of this that's in Marcy's Law would do nothing to remedy many people's concerns who have gone through the justice system. We already have protections for people. They're supposed to be able to meet with the government, to meet with the district attorney and talk with him or her. We have victim witness advocates all around the state that work to do that. And yeah, I'm sure you can find examples of places where that hasn't worked out so well. But you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. That's not been my experience. I know a lot of people that have been very good victim witness advocates to people that have been accused of crimes before, because I've known people that are victims of crimes. So this doesn't do, I think this overpromises to victims something that is just not going to happen. And it also, in the process, puts a monkey wrench in when you're talking about the rights of the accused.
All right, here is Ariel Ludlam. She is one of the proponents of this law. She also happens to be from Sheboygan.
What about opponents, many of them defense lawyers, who say that Marcy's Law would conflict with U.S. constitutional protections of the accused if you could refuse interviews with those lawyers?
So Marcy's Law, what it comes down to is I can say no. I don't have to give you everything right away. I don't have to say, you know, here's my whole past, please pull it apart. But they can, if they can prove that it is detrimental to the case, if they don't have that, then a judge can require that I meet with them, or that I provide the evidence that it's needed. And it does state in the proposal that it is not intended to, it may not be interpreted to, supersede a defendant's federal constitutional rights. Our goal isn't to counter the defendant's rights. It's not to take them away. Our goal is simply to even the playing field and provide constitutional rights for the victim as well.
And we keep talking about...
All right, what's the problem with your explanation there?
Well, it's not victim versus defendant. It's the state versus a defendant. It's the state of Wisconsin, in this case, versus a defendant. And when somebody says, well, I shouldn't have to give up everything to you in terms of I don't know what that means exactly. When you're talking about an alleged crime, the way it works is this. The police investigate, they end up collecting evidence, and they charge somebody with a crime based upon the evidence that they collect. So nobody is required to give up everything in their entire life, or all of, you know, all of their private information. This is what the police collect. So I don't understand what that means. Does it mean then that even the evidence that the police collect, the discovery that the police collect, that somehow an alleged victim can come in and say, you're not entitled to that discovery? And the second point is, well, yeah, there's a provision where you can say, I mean, this is already in Wisconsin law, that if there's something that is protected by privacy law, such as health records, psychological records, psychiatric records, those are already protected by Wisconsin law. As a defense lawyer, we already have to make a showing that it's going to be somehow relevant to the case and potentially exculpatory. We already have to make a showing. I can't just go out as a defense attorney and subpoena. I don't have the power to subpoena someone's medical records. I can't do that in Wisconsin. So, again, there are already protections for that, so I'm not sure what giving up everything means.
All right. Ariel Ludlam also went on to talk about her case, and I want your reaction to this.
Are there specific oversights in your mind regarding your case that would have been fixed with this law?
Absolutely. So I did not continue to push forward with the court process solely because of the lack of privacy. They could have pulled things that had nothing to do with my case, but used it, as they said, as a defamation of character. And that, for me, was enough to say, you know, I will lose out on my justice so that I don't have to drag myself or my family through that.
What she described in her case, it sounds like some, you know, a workplace incident It wasn't a criminal case. Does Marcy's Law, would it even deal with cases that are tort cases that aren't, you know, that are in the civil system and not the criminal?
Well, as I understand it, we're talking about, Marcy's Law talks about people that are accused of crimes, as I understand it. Now, maybe that's changed. Maybe they've added or given broader language to what a victim is, but my understanding is it's always applied to victims of crimes. That's been the intent of it. And, you know, furthermore, when I heard her talk about, you know, that they were going to put things into the case that were irrelevant or had nothing to do with the case, there is already a statute on that. We have rules of evidence. I mean, and a judge gets to rule on whether evidence is relevant or irrelevant. So again, that's already in. I mean, I can't go in if I'm defending somebody accused of a crime and throw everything in their life up against them and use everything against them. There are very specific rules of evidence that we have on what is relevant and what is not relevant. Additionally, we have something in Wisconsin, as I believe every other state does, called the Rape Shield Law. That's commonly referred to as the Rape Shield Law, where I can't get into anybody's past, for example, sexual history, absent some exception. There are certain exceptions to the Rape Shield Law, but generally you can't just get into somebody's past history if it is sexual in nature, in essence. So, again, I'm not sure what Marcy's Law is doing other than perhaps in an unintended way causing a lot of problems with people's constitutional rights. And as far as the language about, well, this isn't intended to interfere with a defendant's constitutional rights, the problem is it does. So even if it's not intended to, if it does, you're just going to add more court challenges. You're going to add, it's going to gum up the system even more. If people are worried about having their cases drag on for a long period of time, I'm afraid that this is going to cause even more problems in that regard because there's going to be more litigation. I mean, again, the parties are the state of Wisconsin and the prosecutor, who is not a victim advocate. They may advocate on behalf of victims, but they don't represent the victim. They represent the state. And then the defendant, who is represented by a criminal defense lawyer. So, you know, again, this I think causes a lot of problems.
So, Jeannie Haruska from the ACLU in New Hampshire, where they defeated Marcy's Law, writes, South Dakota passed Marcy's Law as a constitutional amendment in 2016. Now the state legislature is going back through the cumbersome process of passing another constitutional amendment in order to fix the problems with the original language. That's kind of interesting.
Right, and that's the problem. When you amend the Constitution, it's hard to re-amend the Constitution. I mean, you know, whenever you're talking about the Constitution and amending it, you have to be extremely careful and extremely cautious about doing so. And again, when you have constitutional amendments are supposed to be, you know, they're not supposed to be a lot of broad and flowery language. I mean, sometimes you get some of that broad language and it causes interpretive problems like due process of law. What does that mean? But, you know, when you're talking about doing something like this, you have to think about the unintended consequences of it and the effects that it will have. And I think in some ways, this will be disappointing to victims of crime because, as we talked about, lengthening the process that they have to go through. I feel badly for victims of crime. Of course they should be treated with dignity and respect, and nobody disagrees with that. The question is how you interpret it and what you do with it.
Well, they would differ from you saying, you know, I think there are a lot of people that would like to sanitize the process of and somehow make a rape conviction, you know, somehow less difficult for a woman having to testify against, or man, somebody that's assaulted them, and the defense attorney asking probative tough questions. I think a lot of people would like to make that easier for someone to come forward. The problem is if you take away the power of the defense attorney to do their job, your chances of getting a false conviction go up.
Well, and that's look, what we did with Rape Shield Laws, you can either agree or disagree with that. That actually did make it easier because there was a concern amongst people. They didn't want a defense lawyer to just be able to put up evidence that this person, you know, had a past that involved a lot of sexual behavior, and so they made it much more difficult. Now, you can either agree or disagree with that, but we've already passed laws in that regard. Same, too, with regard to people that are accused of child sexual assault. Our own Wisconsin Supreme Court has talked about there are certain ways to make convictions like that easier. They haven't said that, but that's really the intent of it. There's rules of evidence that make it easier to get into things in those cases that make it more difficult for somebody to defend against. And again, we as a society have to decide what we're going to do with that. Are we going to make it easier and easier and easier for people to be accused of crimes? The conviction rate is already extremely high. Most people never go to trial. Most people never have to experience a trial. I think it's like 3% or something, the last I checked, on cases that actually go to trial. So most cases end up plea bargaining in some way. So you're talking about the minority of cases that end up going to trial and what a person can get into at trial when you're talking about, you know, the scope of cross-examination, for example, which I can also tell you that especially in sexual assault cases, judges are already extremely, I found at least, extremely protective of victims and their dignity and their respect. They want them treated that way, and they should be treated that way. You know, sometimes, though, you're going to have difficult questions, and that's what a trial is all about. It's about answering these difficult questions. That's why, you know, a very small number of cases end up going to trial.
We'll talk more with Casey Hoff on Marcy's Law next on SliceOffice.com.
Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson is a multifaceted guitar shop offering guitar instruction, new and used guitars and amplifiers, and all accessories. Instead of experiencing the total hassle of a big box store or a snarky boutique, take the scenic drive to Fort Atkinson and experience what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic. We love guitars.
We're back at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers, also Madison Computer Works, and Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. We're talking to criminal defense attorney Casey Hoff. He, of course, is against Marcy's Law. The other day when Ariel Ludlum was on with Frederica Freiberg on public television, which isn't what it used to be, listen to the words of Frederica Freiberg as she asks Matt Rothschild, who came on after Ariel Ludlum, listen to this question.
And yet, how difficult is it to almost really come out against victims?
Well, I understand the dilemma that an elected official is in here. No elected official wants to face a commercial next time he or she's running for office to say, wow, he or she opposed victims' rights. What's wrong with this person? But there were a lot of questions raised at the hearing that I attended on this by representatives on both sides, wondering specifically about this question of the Sixth Amendment right of the accused and also some other problems that people were raising about Marcy's Law as it's currently written. So slow things down. Let's look at that. Let's get more testimony and let's try to fix the problems in this.
It does have some bipartisan support, though, in the Wisconsin legislature and even Josh Call.
Yes, I saw that. I was disappointed, of course. But, you know, from a prosecutor's standpoint, I understand, you know, the pressure on them to back the sheriffs have backed it, too. But I think we need to look at what kind of country do we want and understand that people who are accused, you know, can lose their life and liberty if they're not allowed to defend themselves.
Her question. How difficult is it to come out against victims? What a loaded question.
Yeah.
You're not coming out against victims. As a matter of fact, there are a lot of people that think this is actually kind of a false promise to victims.
Right. And that's what a lot of people have said that are against it, which is that it overpromises victims using, you know, very broad language, and that it's not going to be able to work the way that a lot of people think it's going to work. And I would agree with that. So, and that is the false narrative of how you're spinning this. I mean, if you're against this, you're against victims. If you're for it, you're for victims. That's not the way it is. I don't know anybody that's against victims, myself included. It is something that people are very cautious about because we take extremely seriously the rights of the accused. We want to make sure that we're not overpromising things to victims, and we want to make sure that our system works as it's intended to work. And that's also some of the language with this. I mean, all of this, most of this, any is aimed at people that are accused of crimes. Again, people that are accused of crimes are presumed to be innocent. in this country. That is the foundational principle of our country, that people that are accused of crimes are presumed to be innocent. And a lot of this, a lot of the talk around Marcy's Law sort of presumes that everybody that's accused of a crime is guilty. And we just know that that's not true, and that's a very troubling thing. That's already the case, I would argue, with many people in the system. And people say it's slanted in favor of defendants. That's not my experience at all. If anything, when you're accused of a crime, most people presume you to be guilty. Most people see your mugshot on the evening news, and they presume that you've done something wrong because you've been arrested by authority. And, you know, there's a lot of people that go into court, and they feel like the entire system is against them. I mean, I just think that the idea that this is totally slanted in favor of the defendants is absurd. I mean,
all right.
It's completely absurd.
So how do you feel about new Attorney General Josh Call coming out in support of this?
Well, it's really unfortunate because, you know, is it difficult to come out and have that position and be against Marcy's Law? I suppose it is for a politician, but it's really not excusable because, again, he's the chief law enforcement officer of the state. We're talking about upholding people's constitutional rights. I think if he looks at this carefully, he would recognize that there are serious questions about this, including there have been problems in other states, as you pointed out one earlier, Sly, and concerns about this. And so I'm not sure the reason. I'm not sure that he really stated a reason as to why he's in favor of it, but I'd sure like to hear more of an explanation for it because it doesn't make sense to me, and it's disappointing.
All right. Associate law professor Cecilia Klingel writes, as she testified when they were having hearings on this, she writes, "Our final concern is tied to the first two, much of the ambiguity and most of the unintended consequences discussed above could be eliminated or dramatically mitigated if the proposed changes to the rights of victims were addressed through statutory legislation rather than constitutional amendment. Constitutional provisions are drafted broadly by design to express overarching rights and principles rather than to detail the fine points of the implementation, which may need to change over time in ways that the amendment process is not designed to do." What do you make of that argument?
Yeah, so earlier in this conversation, I accidentally said the opposite. The Constitution is drafted broadly. I think I said specific, but it's true that they're drafted broadly. This is very specific language in some of Marcy's Law, but in other parts, I would argue, I guess I respectfully disagree with the professor, I think it's very broad language. When we talk about refusing discovery requests made by the accused, again, what does that mean? When we talk about treating victims with dignity, respect, courtesy, sensitivity, and fairness, that's all broad language to me, and I think it causes a problem because I don't know how that's going to be enforced against the constitutional rights of the accused. And I think that's what it's intended to do, is to somehow, and they talk about evening the playing field and having this, it's somehow this scale of victim versus defendant, and that's really a false equivalency.
But I actually think she's making the same point you are. She said, "Our final concern is much of the ambiguity and most of the unintended consequences discussed above could be eliminated or dramatically mitigated if the proposed changes to the rights of victims were addressed through statutory legislation rather than the constitutional amendment." Isn't she making the same point?
Yeah, I suppose in a way, because you're talking about a statutory language versus putting it into the Constitution. So yes, I would agree because, again, we already have Chapter 950, which is a statute in Wisconsin that addresses victims' rights. And again, I keep going back to this.
Isn't this funny to be discussing this with UW-Platteville College dropout? I'm going through all this lawyerly stuff, but it is fascinating.
Yeah, you're a plenty intelligent guy, Sly, and you know this stuff, and you understand the concerns with this. And so I have grave concerns that this is over-promising things to victims of crime, and at the same time, has the real ability to trample upon the rights of people that are accused of crimes, in spite of the language that says it's not intended to. It may not be intended to, and again, this may be well-intended language, but it does.
Do you think some of this is a reaction to the Me Too movement?
I've heard some people compare it to that, and so I think that it could be. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with the Me Too movement. I think the Me Too movement is great. It's bringing, It's bringing much-needed light to a lot of things that have been suppressed for a very long time and not discussed. That's fine. We can discuss those things, and we should. Once you put this language in the Constitution, though, that's a whole new level. And when we're talking about amending the Constitution, there's a reason it's difficult to amend.
All right, let me do a little juxtaposition before we're done today. If anything, and I'm not talking about constitutional changes, but I've heard a lot of people say over the years that prosecutors have way too much power in the courtroom and that the scales of justice are not equal, that if we should be making any reforms, it should be the other way around.
That the scales of justice are not equal and that we should be making reforms in going after...
Limiting the powers of prosecutors.
Limiting the powers of prosecutors?
Yeah.
Well, prosecutors have an enormous amount of power.
Do they have too much power?
I think in some cases they do. There have been prosecutors around the country, actually, that have run on the exact type of platform that you're talking about. And some of them have taken away some of their own powers, in a sense. I mean, they've said, look, we're not going to prosecute this type of crime. It might be like a low-level marijuana situation. Or, you know, we're not just going to go after the harshest crime that we can charge and then plea bargain it down later. That's been a huge thing, especially at the federal level. The current administration has not done that, but the previous administration did not necessarily always go after, in terms of the prosecutors, the toughest crime that they could possibly get, the one that they could get the most in terms of a mandatory minimum sentence, for example. And so, you know, there's lots of criticism of some prosecutors about things like charge stacking, getting as many charges as you possibly can on the person just because you can under the law, and then plea bargaining it down and getting your best possible result from there. So, I mean, in a way, look, prosecutors, I would argue, in a way, have more power than a judge does. And the reason I say that is because they're the ones that are at the initial gate. They get to decide, am I going to charge this person with a felony offense or a misdemeanor offense? In many cases, there's a choice there. They have to make that choice. And once you charge somebody, for example, with a felony offense, even if that gets dismissed in the end or amended down to a misdemeanor or something like that, you really can't undo a lot of the damage that's already been done just by being charged with a felony. There are thousands of collateral consequences associated with being convicted of a felony and also in being charged with a felony.
Well, I ask because Governor Evers has talked about reducing the state's incarceration rate. And it almost seems like, you know, and I understand the Attorney General's office is a separate office, and Josh Call definitely should operate independently. But I'm sure Josh Call would like to see less incarceration in Wisconsin. And if they're going to work together to bring that down, I would think Marcy's Law might be an impediment to that. And I also think that, you know, making sure that people have adequate representation in Wisconsin would also, in other words, not just kicking people out of prison, but making sure they don't get there in the first place when they shouldn't be, that those would be some of the reforms you'd want to take so the problem just doesn't just build up again.
Absolutely. I mean, when you talk about, we have a real crisis in people that are being appointed to the public defender's office, for example. There's a huge crisis in that. People are talking about, you know, the amount of pay that we're paying lawyers that are appointed to take those cases is so low. It's the lowest in the country, and many people aren't being represented. That causes problems in the system. It causes people to be convicted of things, in some cases that they didn't do, or being convicted of things where it shouldn't be as harsh as it actually is. There's all kinds of things that can happen in that regard. So absolutely. I mean, also getting rid of certain mandatory minimums in some cases might be a good idea. There's all kinds of things that we can do. But yeah, I think, you know, whenever you're injecting this kind of thing into the system, you're asking for, perhaps unintendedly, more incarceration and not less.
And finally, on a positive note, kind of a separate item, Governor Evers has said he will return to the practice of previous governors and that he will pardon.
Well, I think that's a good thing. The pardon power is something that rests with the governor for good reason. And shutting down the pardon powers the previous governor did and not even considering any pardons, no matter the merit of the case, was very problematic to me. I mean, our system is not perfect, and that's really what the pardon power is designed to try and remedy in some small way. And when you shut that down entirely, when you shut down anybody from having a chance to make their case, that's not justice.
Well, maybe Timothy Russell and Brian Pierick will ask for pardons. Who knows, right?
Perhaps.
Casey Hoff, criminal defense attorney in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Thank you for coming on with us today to talk about Marcy's Law.
Thank you, Sly.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, five more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.